again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take out the shiny beauty on the streets of Chicago. We're getting closer to season starting, and my co-pilot is with me. How you doing, the great one, Doug Tonis?
I'm doing great. If any episode of any podcast about the Bulls qualifies as exciting, we'll do our best.
We're going to break some new barriers here, brother, because it's been a while. So we got a lot to talk about. We got a lot to talk about. So let's start out with this first question for you. I've got a lot of emails over the last few weeks, and where are you guys? We're here. So there's going to be quasi half mailbag, half half some topics of the day. I tweeted out a poll at CBE Fred, C Red Fred. What Bull will have the most cumulative, quote-unquote, pressure from median fans for the upcoming season? LaVine, Markkanen, Parker, Dunn, what do you think the winner was?
Well, I've not seen the poll, but I would say LaVine has the most pressure.
LaVine, 76%.
From fans.
Fans and media. I would say media, too, is probably going to be.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. Internally, he really has no pressure. Right, he just signed his big contract. What does he care? Jabari Parker has the most real pressure, or maybe Chris Dunn because he's trying to earn a contract. Parker is trying to get his next year picked up or a contract. Yeah, those are actually maybe real pressure situations. Levine's got the truckload of money. Even if he fails, that's oh well.
It's so funny you mentioned this because you took the exact same opinion that. That our good friend at Bull Scripted, Keith Franz, did on a Twitter war I was having with him. But my point is, I don't really think it's even close. I think LaVine has nobody's expecting anything out of Parker. It's the reason he was signed to a 1-year deal. And to big picture here, if LaVine has a horrible year, it's going to be very unpleasant for him with the fans and the media. Carlos Boozer-ish, I think. And people forget how ugly that got here near the end. He had a decent first year, and the team was so fantastic, it really wasn't an issue until things got a little worse and people started complaining about him. But I think it'd get really ugly for Zach. Yeah, he's going to be making money, but, I mean, that's, to me, the pressure that really affects how a person plays, is if the fans are booing him in the United Center and the media is just hammering in the papers because players pay attention to that. You disagree?
I don't know. I guess if you and I each got a job, and my job paid me $80 million guaranteed, but people yelled at me and made fun of me in the press, and your job paid you $20 million, and you didn't have to deal with that, I'd still take my job. So, I agree with you, in terms of the fans and media applying more pressure, but in terms of, I think there's a much bigger pressure to try and earn a contract than there is to make other people happy. I think these guys have inner circles where enough people kiss their ass that they can ignore all the other stuff.
Yeah, maybe. I wonder if that's true, though. I think that these guys are professionals. I think they read everything. I really do. And I think that, LaVine is, I think his reputation, it's clear. He saw a lot of guys that were questioning him. And you can tell he's reading Twitter. It'd be interesting to see how he performs this year. I'd be shocked if he's as bad as he was last year. But if he does replicate last year's season, it's going to get really ugly. I think it's going to get really bad.
I got a great analogy for you. I had a friend who had lots of NBA friends, and especially around the Bulls. And he got to know Larry Hughes when Larry Hughes was with the Bulls. And so, he caught up with Larry, after he left when he was with Cleveland. And, that website, "Hey, Larry Hughes, stop taking so many bad shots." So he mocks Larry Hughes about the website, right? He's like, "What do you think about this website?" And Larry Hughes responded to him and he goes, "People pay me a lot of money to take those shots." So I'm just saying, some of these guys, pretty oblivious. Larry Hughes was getting hate like crazy.
You think?
Still just. Didn't
think
care.
Zach LaVine isn't remotely like Larry Hughes when it comes to paying attention to what people are saying about him. I agree with you. There's people like that could care less. But let's not forget Zach LaVine's a guy who was reading, Nick Friedell's tweets. And, I think he reads a lot. I think he's a lot more aware of what people say about him. And I think it affects him a lot more. There's players like that. You know, Durant's like that. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But I am right now so bullish on Parker. Been watching a ton of video on him offensively. I think he's just absolutely fantastic. And I think if he can approach where he was, we may have really found a stolen a gem here. So I'm pretty high on him. And I agree, there's pressure. Hey, he's got to play well to earn another contract next year. But nobody's really expecting much out of Jabari Parker, so I don't feel that way. So I think he's got everything to gain, nothing to lose. Let's move on.
I think from a fan perspective, sure, sure. For sure.
Yep, and even the media. Let's move on to another tweet I had, and I'd like your opinion on this one. Some of the same fans who criticized the Bulls for passing on Dennis Smith Jr. after last year's summer league criticized that the LaVine-Parker signings due to the injury risk. And that's because they you can recover from the injury was my point. But and then I also brought up the point, I think most of those people had no idea that Dennis Smith Jr. tore his ACL in high school. So that's why they were caught in the complete hypocrisy. But bigger question here, what's the bigger risk? Drafting Dennis Smith Jr., signing Parker to a one-year deal, I think we both agree that is the least risky, and then or signing LaVine to 4 years, $80
million. Well, I think probably the biggest risk in this case is signing LaVine, because you already are aware of how Dennis Smith Jr. recovered at the time you drafted him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not like he just didn't play in college and you have no idea what's going to happen. Or it's not like a Ben Simmons situation where he tore his ACL and now you're going to have to wait a year before he plays. You know, you've already seen the recovery. Like, you've seen it. With LaVine, if LaVine had the same year this year as he did in year three with Minnesota when he came back, and if he had played really well when he came back, then I think that contract would maybe not be viewed as such a risk. The reason it's viewed as risky is we've not yet seen LaVine actually recover and play well after the ACL. And so that's what makes that deal riskier. In general, I kind of agree that, like, if you want to draft a guy that has a high risk profile, and you're spending a number seven pick on a guy with a very high risk profile who may not turn out well, that's actually probably a pretty huge risk for a rebuilding team.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was my point, is I think, you know, just because a lot of people are arguing, well, you're not paying Dennis Smith Jr. anything. Yeah, you're not paying him anything, but it's a top 10 pick. That's the point. There's so much value in that top 10 pick. And when a player like Dennis Smith Jr., whose entire game, let's be honest, is based on athleticism. He's not a shooter. He's like a poor man's Derrick Rose. That's basically what he is. And you better hit on those top 10 picks. And to me, like, Jabari Parker's one-year deal, risk comparing that to paying $20 million for 1 year, there's almost no risk in that. I mean,
There's no risk in that at all.
Yeah, so my point is, you know, I agree. There's risk in all these moves, but Jabari's a distant third to the other two. But I think it's debatable. I think when you look at Dennis Smith Jr. with that repaired ACL, again, game based on athleticism, that's a massive risk, especially when you had talented players still available, you know, at that position afterwards. The rookie of the year obviously was, you know, and Donovan Mitchell. So interesting debate that we went back and forth on quite a bit.
Yeah. The only thing I say with Dennis Smith Jr., though, is you saw him recover. So you had some idea that he would recover. It wasn't the same risk, you know, because you know he's recovered. But, you know, if you hadn't seen him recover, so like if we say Michael Porter Jr. as an example, a corollary from this year's draft, yeah, where you've not seen him recover from the injury yet,
amen,
then that becomes a huge risk. And we see how that played out for him, where he fell so far in the draft. So when you see the guy recover already and you feel like, all right, I kind of know what I'm going to get already, then the risk of the injury is mitigated. You know, you have to do whatever you can to hit on these first-round picks that are in the, you know, your high first-round picks. If you're top 7-8, you know, I mean, I think after round 7 in a typical draft, there's usually a pretty good amount of drop-off, and now it becomes more scattered where the good players are. I mean, there's still always some greats, but, you know, top 7 is, you know, pretty consistently able to get some pretty good talent.
Yeah. So I did receive an email just ripping the Bulls front office for their handling of the Jimmy Butler deal.
Just one?
I've probably over the years, probably about 500 or 600. But this one specifically, I thought was a little bit unfair in that it acted like the Bulls were being cheap for not signing Butler in, I think it was the third year Is that correct? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, so his third year, he was eligible for an early extension, and if memory serves me correctly, they offered him $10 million a year, and he turned it down to bet on himself, and he then got the max deal.
And he received the max in a restricted free agency year, correct?
Correct.
All right, yeah. So that's where I'd like to go at. Now, you've been a expert on it and a Bulls historian. Do you recall being outraged that the Bulls offered him $10 million a year in that third year of the deal and saying, what a dumb move by the front office? Or do you feel like, I thought it was a fair offer?
It was actually at the time. I think most people thought it was potentially a pretty excessive offer. I mean, you have to go back and look at what Butler did after 3 years. He was basically a very strong defensive player, but you don't pay guys who are really strong defensive players. He hadn't really, at this point, proven that he was more than Thabo Sefolosha. And $10 million was a lot. Now, that's maybe a little overstatement. He was probably better than Thabo offensively even then. But yeah. He was not a great offensive player. The next year, he actually had the biggest leap in the history of the NBA in terms of, like, advanced metrics, like PER, win score, and all these other things. And, like, the biggest leap ever. Like, the largest improvement ever. And so the people who say the Bulls didn't predict that, well, no, I'm sure they didn't. yeah. show me anyone who predicts that someone is going to have the biggest leap in the history of the league ever and then say, well, you should have seen that coming and then signed him to $12 million a year like the year before. I think they gave him a very fair offer. I think the Bulls generally give all their guys, you know, reasonable offers for early extensions if they like them, and they give them, you know, they tell them to go seek an offer in restricted free agency, and if they can't find an offer, then they give them, you know, more of a hardball offer. And I think that's okay. I think it's a decent negotiating way to go. It probably doesn't win them any friends in terms of the contract negotiation process so much, but on the other hand, would you rather have them just, like, max everybody and have lots of friends and terrible deals? I mean, so I think they work it out okay.
Yeah, agreed. And you're right. I do recalling that year that Butler had after he decided to bet on himself was the greatest, to me, the most improvement I've ever seen from one player from one season to the other, especially on the offensive end. It was insane how much better Jimmy was. And, you know, part of it, you've got to ask yourself, would he have had the same delta? You know, probably it would have been close, but who knows? You know, when maybe he bet on himself, maybe, you know, it really put more effort in the gym than he would have. Who knows? I'm not saying that's probably unlikely for a guy like Jimmy Butler, but it's possible. You know, it's not just assuming if he would have signed that deal that he would have come out and played that well. I thought he was definitely more assertive than in past seasons. Anyhow.
Yeah, he went from a PER of 13.5 to 21.3.
That's insane. That's
incredible.
I mean,
13.5 is below average, and 21.3 is all-star.
Yeah, in 1 year.
And his efficiency went from 52%, which is below the league average, to 58%, which is above the league average, true shooting percentage. You know, like, all of his everything was just through the roof better. I mean, like, amazingly better. So, yeah, you just don't predict that. And it's not like, you know, he was a young guy. He came into the league at 22, which is maybe 3 years older than most guys. And, you know, he was 24 after three seasons in the league. So now this huge improvement came between 24 and 25. It's just not something you see very frequently. I mean, in this case, this amount of improvement is not something you see ever. So, yeah, I don't fault the Bulls even the teeniest, lightest, most minuscule amount for that. That third year when we offered him $10 million, he shot 39% from the field that year.
Wow.
And 28% from three.
Yeah, it's like Heinrich.
So, I mean, it's not like he was just, like, you know, blowing stuff up. I mean, this is a guy who obviously put in the work and did an outstanding job. Great for Jimmy that he did that. You know, amazing. But there was no reason to think that was going to happen. I mean, like, none.
So then, the same emailer went on. This is something I didn't tell you before the show. But he went on for, you know, another basically five email pages equivalency to rip them for not being able to build around Jimmy. And which I would counter, you know, I always, it was just, you know, just basically blabbing the Bulls didn't build around Jimmy, blah, blah, blah. If you take a step back and look when Butler really made that jump, that season was a 2014-15 season, okay? So that was the year he really became all-star quality. The Bulls won 50 games, and he really just, you know, busted out. The next season, you still had Noah. You still had Rose under contract, and they were basically both untradeable. You still had Gasol. You still had Nico. You know, you still had a lot of players on that team, Taj. And then the following year, you know, so number one, how are you going to do a rebuild around Jimmy? In the first year, he does great when you got Rose and Noah on the team in two basically untradeable contracts. The first year where they were actually had some room to make moves was 2016. And I don't want to get into the list of 4-year deals that were handed out that season that were just horrific. They signed Rondo to basically a 1-year deal and Wade to a 2-year deal. I don't believe that team was bereft of talent and just an abomination when you had, you know, everybody's favorite Nico Mirotic on the team. It seems like all the Bulls hater front office haters all in general love Nico Mirotic. He was on that team and he sucked for vast majorities of that year. Taj was on that team, who the great Tom Thibodeau decided to bring up to Minnesota. And then, you know, obviously had McDermott. It wasn't a great team, believe me. But it was the first year they could have really built around Jimmy. And they decided instead of giving 4-year deals to give, you know, 1- and 2-year deal. I'd like to counter these people. What move would you have done? Like, what was on the table there that the Bulls missed out on? I can't think of one. Can you?
I think if you're going to do anything and you're going to make the case would have been that you don't sign Wade and Rondo to 2-year deals and you roll your money into the next year and see what you can find there. Or you roll your money into this year, you keep Jimmy instead of making that trade, and then you see what you could build around him, you know, this year. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you had room for 2 max free agents, you know, maybe you could have lured LeBron James and Paul George. Now, based on how things turn out, that seems pretty unlikely. George didn't go play with LeBron in L.A., even though he was previously extremely linked to L.A. He's never been linked to Chicago. The news about LeBron, even him going to L.A., certainly makes it seem like he wasn't going because it was his best opportunity to win, but that he actually just wanted to be in L.A. for L.A.'s sake, because clearly I think he could have found a better opportunity to win like Philadelphia at a bare minimum. And he went to the West, which is much harder. So there's not really a lot of reason to think that that would have worked out had the Bulls gone after cap room with Jimmy Butler. But that would have been the reasonable alternative. Had you not signed, you know, Wade and Rondo, you could have tried 2 years in a row last year and this year to get a cap room plan to build around Jimmy. And then maybe if you don't sign those guys and you trade away a couple other guys, you could tank in the process and still keep Jimmy. I don't think you would get so bad with him there. I mean, I think he'd drag up the team to at least 30-something wins. But, you know, those would be our other alternatives. I'm pretty happy the way it turned out. I mean, I don't really see where they're going to go. It's hard to see how they would have gotten bad enough having him on the roster. So I think it's probably a pretty good deal. I mean, in the end, we have to play this season out. We have to see how the Bulls do this season. You and I are both way above the Vegas norm, right? The Vegas over-under is 27.5. You and I are both well above the Vegas over-under in terms of how we expect the Bulls to perform this year. But to me, the front office has done a pretty tremendous job of, in 1 year, turning over, you know, what looked to be an aging roster that wasn't going anywhere into a roster that is, you know, full of guys who are under 25 with big upside. And that's pretty much the whole team outside of, you know, Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday. That's, you know, everyone else is a young guy with upside. So I think they deserve quite a bit of kudos for flipping things around. Now, will they be able to turn that into something special later? You know, who knows? But you have to like where they're sitting now in terms of the amount of talent and upside versus the amount of age. And they also really don't have any, you know, bad contracts. So I think they've done a pretty good job in the past couple of years of flipping the thing around.
Yeah, and I'd also counter, it's easy for us to say, it would have been probably the best thing to do is not to sign anybody in 2016. But if you go back to that period and you look, Jimmy Butler wanted Dwayne Wade. He was recruiting him. And can you imagine if the front office told Jimmy Butler, you know what, we're gonna keep our, you know, keg dry here and not sign anyone when every team in the league is throwing out 4-year deals for massive amounts of money? How would have that gone over? You know, Jimmy, we're just going to keep you with Nico and McDermott, and, you know, we just drafted Valentine. We're just going to keep the team as is. You know, we're not going to sign anybody, even though Dwayne Wade, I know he wants to come here, and I know you want him to come here, but we're not going to spend the money. That wouldn't have gone over at all. I mean, come on.
Who cares, though? I mean, it doesn't matter how that would have gone over to me, because when we signed Dwayne Wade, the day we signed him, I'm like, this is an idiotic mistake. I'm like, thank God it's only 2 years, but this is going to be stupid. And we ended up paying $50 million for Dwayne Wade to be here for 1 year and play badly. I mean, it was a terrible move. There's no, you know, it's good that they weren't as terrible as many of the other front offices who signed guys for 4 years at the same rates. But it was a bad idea then, and they shouldn't have done it. They, you know, should have figured out how to convey that message to Jimmy Butler that this isn't the thing to do right now.
Next question. Fred, you've stated you believe there are 6 teams ahead of the Bulls in this upcoming season. Out of those 6 teams, which one do you think is most likely to fall this upcoming year? So he's referring to the 6 teams I have. I have 2 tiers of the 6 teams I believe are better than the Bulls. The top tier, obviously, you got the Boston, Toronto, and Philly. And I actually think Toronto, if he comes to play, you know, and everything goes as planned, you know, Kawhi Leonard comes to play and is the player he was, I think that's the best team in the East. And Boston be number 2, Philly number 3. And then the next tier, I still have Milwaukee ahead of the Bulls. I still have Washington ahead of the Bulls. And Indiana ahead of the Bulls. Those 3 teams, I think, are a step below. I'd say out of all those teams, I mean, you get 1 injury to Giannis, I think Milwaukee's a lottery team. But out of all those teams that like most likely to fall, it's a mess in Washington. I really think that team has some personalities that, you know, they signed Dwight Howard, or they were able to obtain acquire Dwight Howard. I think there's major issues there with Wall. And Beal don't seem to like each other very much. And I witnessed a game on April 1st where they had everyone but Wall, and the Bulls were actively trying to lose, and they somehow beat, you know, a team in the Wizards that were trying to go for the playoffs by 20. You know, the Bulls beat that team. So I think that team is out of those 6 most likely to fall. What say you?
Well, I'm gonna kind of agree with you there. I think that Washington is probably, of that group, the team most likely to fall apart. I think Toronto actually has a high likelihood of falling apart if whatever goes down with Kawhi doesn't work well. I think that's just one of those huge risk things. I mean, who knows what that guy's deal is. So if he decides to not play or just isn't healthy or whatever, that team could also just completely fall apart quickly. But I'd still go with Washington. I agree with you. I don't think anyone likes each other. The Dwight Howard move, Dwight's been a cancer every place he's been. So it's just like he just decided to throw a match into the powder keg there, in my opinion. I think that team has a lot of issues from a personality perspective. And I think that can destroy any franchise. You know, to me, I don't even know if there's – to me, there's Boston, Philly, and Toronto if Kawhi plays. And then there's kind of like everyone else. I don't even know if, like, Milwaukee, Miami, Indiana, Washington, I think, are kind of like the group that people have sort of next. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I believe any of these teams are better than the Bulls.
I agree.
I mean, like, I think they probably are, like, maybe more likely than not. Like, if someone put a gun to my head, I'd probably put the Bulls behind them all. But if the Bulls finish ahead of any of them, I can't say I'd be, like, surprised. I mean, none of these teams have, like, great talent. Like, what, these teams might be, like, 45-win type teams? Like, it's just not hard for me to see the Bulls or pretty much any team in the East, you know, competing in that, like, 4-8 slot for the playoffs. I think that is just completely wide open.
Yeah, I think everyone would be surprised if you take any team in the East and say, all right, pick your top 10 players in either roster, the Bulls or that team. So let's just say Orlando. I think everyone would be surprised, if you're being honest with yourself, how many times the Bulls have the majority of 10 players the first top 10 players are on the Bulls. I'm not saying they're going to have the best player in every situation, but I think for the most part, the Bulls will have between 6 and 7 of the top 10 players between either roster.
It's sort of misleading, though, right? I mean, it matters most how your top three players are.
No doubt. No doubt.
You know, like if winning in 4 to 10, it really doesn't matter if you lose 1 to 3. And I'm not saying the Bulls will lose 1 to 3, everyone. I'm just saying I wouldn't look at it in that way. And I agree with your point overall. The Bulls have great depth. That will be a strength for them, for sure. But depth is maybe like the least useful strength in the NBA. And of all the major team sports, maybe it's like the least useful to have depth, you know, compared to like any other team sport.
Yep. Two more big questions. This is from Steve Trudeau, email question. Fred, please share your top tier 9 with Doug and get his opinion on who number 10 is. So he's referring to in one of the previous, I think on the Bullseye, I have a tier 9, the top 9 players in the NBA. And I think there's a clear delineation between these 9 and everyone else. And it's right. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Curry, Harden, Giannis, Embiid, Anthony Davis, and Westbrook. Who did I miss? Kawhi Leonard. Those are 9. Now, I know you're going to say Kawhi Leonard. Well, I'm just assuming he's going to approach his former self. And he clearly, before he was hurt, was one of the top 9 players in the NBA. So those are my 9. Who's the 10th? You can choose Damian Lillard, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Karl Anthony Towns, Oladipo, Porzingis, or Irving.
Who's next? Boy, I'd have to say, when I look at that list, I'd have to probably say it's got to be Damian Lillard or Jimmy Butler.
Absolutely. I agree, too.
Would be my next two choices. And I can't say I really watched a whole lot of Damian Lillard. You know, I know him statistically, but I think I would go Damian Lillard next and then Jimmy Butler.
I would, too. You know, Damian Lillard had MVP consideration last year. I mean, he had MVP votes. He's definitely, to me, number 10 right now. I'd even put Paul George ahead of Butler just because I think he's overall a better player. But, you know, no doubt you can make an argument Jimmy Butler, and I love Towns. The bigger point is that there aren't any Celtics in that top 10. So that's the point I was trying to make is I keep on getting emails from Bulls fans. Who's the top
I don't think player? I put Embiid in that group, though. That top 9 you have, I don't think I got Embiid in that
really? Oh, my gosh, Doug. I'm shocked to hear you say that. Really? I mean, assuming he's healthy, he's got to be in there. He's clearly.
Well, I mean, he has played like 25% of his possible games in the NBA, so we can definitely assume he'll be healthy. There's no safer assumption you could make in the league than that Embiid will be healthy this year.
But I mean,
because I think by the end of last year, they let him play in back-to-backs, like somewhere around like March. So they did have that going for him.
Would you put Kyrie Irving ahead of him?
I don't know. I mean, I think I would maybe at this point, just for like 1 year, I would probably say Damian Lillard is ahead of him. Jimmy Butler is ahead of him. I'm also just not as convinced that centers make as big an impact as the guards do in the modern NBA.
No doubt. I agree with that. On the offensive end, no doubt.
You know, so, and maybe Jimmy Butler not, because Jimmy Butler doesn't shoot the three really that great.
Paul George.
Or Damian Lillard is a great three-point shooter. So, you know, maybe I'd say Damian Lillard, you know. But a guy you have to feed the ball in the post to and has to shoot twos. You know, I think Embiid obviously can make a big defensive impact. I just don't know. Maybe I'm just, like, really slow to get on the bus. Like, I'm going to look like an idiot in 6 months. But I just don't think Embiid is going to have the same impact on winning as Damian Lillard does.
So, yeah, bigger picture, my point was there's no Celtics in the top 10. And I think you can make the case there's no Celtics in the top 15. There's a lot of them in probably 15 to 50.
I think Irving is probably top 15. But, yeah, it's close.
Yeah, he's not top 10, though.
I mean, and the gap, though, between, we'll say, like, 10 and 18 is probably not that big compared to, say, 1 to 5. I mean, like, the drop-off between, say, what you get out of LeBron, Harden, Durant,
Anthony Davis,
you know, whoever you have at that, you know, maybe Anthony Davis, and, you
no
know,
doubt. Anthony Davis.
The drop-off after that is really big. I mean, it's really big. So I think from that perspective, I think even I don't think it matters that much. I think when you're with Boston, you're hoping, if you're a Boston fan, I mean, I'm obviously not hoping because I don't give a crap about Boston, but if you're a Boston fan, you're hoping that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, you know, become guys who are, you're going to compete to be in that tier. You hope Horford hangs on for another year. You hope Gordon comes back healthy. I mean, if you actually ended up with like 5-6 guys that were top 50, that would be just absolutely fearsome to deal with. I mean, it really would, even if you didn't have anyone in the top 15. If you had 6 guys in the top 50, you would just steamroll the East.
Yeah. Fred and Doug, please give me your top 3 in order. Bulls most likely to make the All-Star team this upcoming season. I'll go first. My number one is, without a doubt, Parker. The more I watch Jabari Parker, his offensive skills are, it's like unparalleled. And he's been sidelined, obviously, by 2 devastating ACL injuries. You know, he's never going to be all-world defensively, but neither is Harden, neither is Steph Curry. I mean, if you can play as good as he can, there's a couple things I noticed. Number one and two is he's a much better passer than advertised, watching a lot of this tape. He did a ton of really nice stuff, I thought, with the ball, passing it. You know, he's not a huge number of assists, but he can move the ball, and he's not a selfish player, I think, by any means. And his 3-point shot was fantastic last year. I think he's going to approach 40%. I think he's the most likely to make the All-Star team. I got Markin in 2 and Levine 3rd. What say you?
Well, I'm going to mix it up a little bit. I'm going to go with no one, no way, no how. My 3 guys.
Dare you.
Come on. There's no way we're going to make the All-Star team.
Doug, have you looked at the East? It's awful.
If we're going to go with one, I'm going to say Lowry number 1, and I'll go with Parker number 2 and Levine number 3. And you know, the reason being that I don't think Parker is going to be getting enough minutes. He's not going to be playing power forward. Maybe he's not going to be as effective at small forward. I think they're going to limit the amount of shots he gets a little bit. I think Lowry gets in maybe as like a real big man, which I think there might just be fewer competition for. Though you can argue Parker gets in as a big man. I guess now they aren't really splitting up big men either. They just call them forward, so Parker's just as eligible. Maybe I've talked myself into your ranking too. I really don't think any of them have a chance. I really don't. I think there's the problem is going to be as well that there's not enough shots to go around. So I don't think anyone's going to get enough minutes and enough opportunity. There's going to be a big minute crunch for this team. There's going to be a big shot crunch. Yeah, I don't think they're going to have a 20-point score. I don't think the team is going to be that great. And so if the team is not performing at this very high level, you know, you're not likely going to have the all-star type selection. And maybe that's a little unfair. I don't think the team is going to be like at a plus where, you know, like if you're a 60-win, on pace to be a 60-win team, they just start throwing all the berth at you. You know, the Bulls will be a team maybe competing for the 7th-8th spot. So I don't think they'll be a team that kind of gets one of those at large bids just by default. And I think they'll share the wealth too much. So I think that's what it's going to hold them all back. So that's kind of my take. But yeah, I agree. I don't know. I take it back. I'm going to stick with Markin number 1, Parker number 2, Levine number 3.
Sounds good. Last question before we bring the bus in for another exciting drive. Big question. How many wins is it going to take? This is from Aries, by the way. How many wins is it going to take for Fred to keep his job this season?
I'm going to say like 75. I don't know. I don't think they want to bring Fred back. I think, you know, but probably in the mid-40s probably brings him back. I'm going to sound like an idiot because I've temporarily brain farted here. His next year, is that his last under contract, right?
He's in his fourth year. He's got one more year after this year.
This is his fourth year. So he's got 1 year after this. The question would be, do you bring him back as a lame duck head coach? And I think that would be the best alternative for them, is at the end of this year, if they win 40-something games, to bring him back without signing him to an extension and see what happens. Because I just don't think you want Fred Hoiberg here for like 8 years, you know, or something like that. I just don't think he's that caliber of a coach. But I also think if he has a good year, you can take a chance on him for one more.
Agreed.
And see what happens.
Yeah, I think if the Bulls win between 37 and 41 games, I think he'll be able to play out his last year. Anything less than 37, so 36 or below, I think he's going to be fired. And I think it'd be justified. I think he's supposed to be an offensive wizard. He's got more offensive talent this season than he's ever had here, arguably. Outside of his first year, that team had a lot of offensive talent, but it was just decimated by injuries after going. They were 21-12 at one point, and then Noah went out, and at various times, Gasol and Butler, and it was a joke. And Rose went out. I mean, it was just an insane amount of injuries his first season. And that team finished 500. I think this is the best offensive team he's had since that first year, and I think it's got the potential to be better than that team. Offensively. Defensively, you got two guys that are really good defensively in Dunn and Wendell Carter Jr. Obviously, Carter Jr. being a rookie, not going to have that much of an impact just due to minutes and poor officiating. So it's going to be a struggle on the defensive end, no doubt about that. But if they're not like top 10 offensively, I think a lot of that's on him. A couple things that really bothered me about Fred Hoiberg. I think a couple of his minute decisions, I think, have been just absolutely ridiculous. Starting out with Jerian Grant, handing the starting position to Jerian Grant for far too long at the beginning of last year when it was clear Dunn was a much better alternative and deserved it. And also all the times he played Paul Zipser in the previous season, just an abomination, just a joke. And I don't know what he was thinking. So, I've never been really high on the amount at his judging of talent. So I continually think that his minutes with Valentine has been very poor. So those are the three things about Fred. We better see some offensive magic this year or else shouldn't he go? I mean, that's what he's supposed to be, an offensive coach.
Yeah, I think the idea that he's a great offensive coach is a little bit overstated anyway. And they talk about hoy ball. Every time I hear that phrase, I want to throw up in my mouth a little bit. Oh, wow. You think we should shoot threes? Like, that's just ingenious. No one came up with that before you, that we should run and shoot threes. It's just an amazing system you've come up with there. Just really groundbreaking.
Nobody else came up with that.
That excited. But, I would defend him a little bit against some of those things. You know, for me, it's easy to see him play Zipser. And Zipser is practicing hard, and he's trying to reward guys for some of those habits when you got a young team. I always think there's like enough stuff going on in the internals of a team. It can be hard for me to gauge the minute thing. You know, I tend to look at the minute things like very mathematically sometimes. But when you do factor in like the people side of it, that you're trying to build a culture and other things, and you don't really know what's going on with that, I think a lot of the times those decisions don't make sense from the eye test. It's because of some of those things underneath that are happening. I generally think it's usually not because the coach is just a complete idiot. And that may or may not be fair or true. Maybe I'm giving Fred too much credit there. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of the case that sometimes you've got some things like that. And your love for Valentine is pretty insane. I mean, I just got to say, this guy, he's all right, but the amount you like rip on Nico for how much you love Valentine, when you juxtapose those things together, it's just like really crazy. I mean, it really is. Like, Nico has like been a better player for the Bulls than Valentine has through like the years they've been here. And Nico's been nothing special. He's been nothing great. But Valentine's really been a whole lot of nothing at all. I mean, I hope he has a good year. You know, and when I watch him, like, I feel like he's got a decent amount of skills, but it does not seem to apply them in a way that's consistent or useful or helpful. So we'll see how things go with him this year. I think he has some opportunity this year, but we'll hope for the best for all of our young Bulls. And we'll hope that Fred puts it all together and creates a great offense. I think he's got a lot of challenges, and this will show whether he's a good offensive coach. And the reason that I say that, he's got a lot of talent. He's got a lot of guys who can score, but he's also got a lot of guys who maybe aren't natural passers, and he's going to have to try and figure out how to divvy up shots. He's got some poor fit on the roster. So this is the type of thing where a good offensive coach can manage those types of things and then turn this into a good offense because the total talent is there. You know, if you're only a good offensive coach, if you have great offensive players who also fit seamlessly together, then you're not a great offensive coach. You just have really great pieces. So he has, like, the talent, but he's got some other challenges that need to work out to utilize that talent. And if he does that, then I'll start thinking maybe he deserves a little credit.
So I'm assuming, Doug, you were probably celebrating St. Patrick's Day when you missed Denzel Valentine scoring 34 against the Eastern Conference champion Cavs this past March.
Oh, well, at least if he had that one good game. I mean, because Nico didn't have any good games last year, right? I mean, none. He was just crap on a stick the whole year.
I know. I'm just going to say. I'm just trying to throw some ammo for my guy. Let me just say, I think when Valentine's in 4 years, we're going to look back, and I think he's going to look, I'm hoping this is true, just as good as Nico, if not better. I definitely believe that. I'm going to say I believe that. I think Valentine's going to have a great – I think offensively the guy has no fault. He can pass, he can rebound, he can shoot, and he shoots a three.
And he's slow.
And he's a little bit so – he's not uber slow. Athletic.
He's got that going for him.
He's not uber athletic. We'll see what happens.
He can't create a shot.
Take a pot shot at Valentine without responding. Are you kidding me? So I admit I may have overrated him. I think he's definitely maybe a tad bit worse than, as I predicted, a poor man's Paul Pierce. But he's definitely better than most of the haters I've predicted him to be. I think that's a fair assessment.
Well, once you say poor man's anything, who knows even what that means? I could be a poor man's Paul Pierce. I mean, it just depends how poor we're talking about. Pierce has got a couple $100 million, so if I got a dollar, I could be a poor man's Paul Pierce and $200 million as good as he is.
Do you like how I avoided the negative statement?
I'll give you the defense there. I hope Valentine does well. Like I said, I agree that I see all the skills that he has, but I'm not necessarily convinced. He strikes me as a guy who just doesn't quite have enough athleticism to be in the NBA and isn't quite good enough at any one of these skills to then be a great role player. Like, he's a jack of all trades that's not good enough at all of them to be that type of guy. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. Obviously, everyone on the team is going to have a chance, and I hope the best for all of the young Bulls, including Denzel. I hope you're right. I hope we look back in 4 years and he's a great player. I think we're going to look back in 4 years and just think, he was an okay player in what was one of the worst drafts in this era, and that just is what it is.
No doubt about that. That draft, you redraft that, I guarantee if Valentine's top 10, that draft was horrendous. And I just looked at it the other day. I could not believe how bad it was. But all right, my man, we're pulling the B. I almost forgot how you – the BRB in from another great ride. It's so good to talk to you, my man. We're only, 58 days away from opening night. So we're going to – this is going to start picking up. These rides are going to start picking up with greater pace as we approach the greatness of the beloved Bull opening night.
And I'm going to plug something real quick.
Oh, no.
So if you missed my draft party, Bull's opening night party at my house.
Oh my God!
You're also invited.
That's awesome.
Of the show.
I didn't even know that. I'm down. I'll definitely be there.
So it'll be another fun night. Very similar. Now going up against Philly, we'll probably get our asses kicked.
No,
it'll be a fun night.
We're gonna shake up the world. I guarantee it. That's gonna be a win. Philly's not dead.
Beat Philly on the road, huh?
I think
on opening night. I don't think it's gonna happen. But I hope. I appreciate your optimism. And we didn't get a chance to talk about it, so maybe for next show. I think the Bulls schedule is kind of interesting this year, and affords them some opportunities. So we'll save that one for next show.
That sounds good, brother. All right, my man. Until next time. Enjoy. Have a good week, and I'm looking forward to our next ride on the Big Red Bus.
All right. See you then.
Bye bye.